Simon Tesfamariam, thank you for being with us today on COVID, Race, and Democracy.
Hey, Polina, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Tell the listeners the basics about you.
I am a medical doctor born in the United States of Eritrean background, who has lived in Eritrea and gotten a chance to see that part of the world. And part of this think tank, I'm the executive director of the New Africa Institute, which has been focusing on this Tigray conflict as well as other issues going on in Africa. And at the New Africa Institute, we focus on producing high quality research reports for the purpose of creating a Africa of collective peace, prosperity, and progress. That is a little bit about me and what I do.
We wanted to talk to you about this recent report published on May 9th of this year, titled Disinformation in Tigray, Manufacturing Consent for a Secessionist War. What a loaded title. And I read the report last night, studied it as carefully as I could. It's a fascinating read, and it's a damning report of the current narrative that Western media is presenting to the public, mainly around atrocity reporting. What is the purpose of this report? Obviously, the title is very telling.
So the report's main purpose was to look at the current narrative about the Tigray conflict and get to the source of it, which is manufacturing consent for war within Ethiopia and Eritrea, to bring those countries to back within the control of the United States and the West. So the current narrative is one where TPLF is portrayed as sort of heroic and as this force for good in the Horn of Africa, and that the Tigrayan people are being targeted by the federal government of Ethiopia and the Eritrean Defense Forces and the Amhara militias located in a neighboring region that have come into Tigray. And so this is not based on evidence. There's the claims of genocide and sexual violence and all these horrific things going on. And we asked for the evidence. Where's the evidence? And when you look at it, basically this narrative is the singular type of narrative, reductionist narrative, that does support this some type of interventionist policies from the West. And so what's actually going on is detailed in that report, and we can talk about that.
When I was reading the report, it really sounded to me like something straight out of the Project for the New American Century Neocon Operations Manual for a Dirty War in Syria or an Arab Spring, Gene Sharp-style color revolutions. Is that what's going on?
Exactly. That's exactly what's going on. The nations of Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Somalia, I should say, are being targeted right now for regime change, because what's going on is they're moving away from these puppet regimes or Western control. In the case of Eritrea, it had long been outside of Western control, but Ethiopia and Somalia have very exciting sort of leaderships now that are changing this reality and moving in the direction of Eritrea as well. And so you have this Horn of Africa that is collectively aspiring to be sovereign and free, and America, the West, wants to take it back into this arrangement where it's client states that are just doing its bidding and being super exploited for their purposes. And so that day is over, and they're doing everything in their power to reverse this reality. And that's why you're seeing all this disinformation being manufactured, because of the fact that nobody would accept what the United States is doing had they known exactly what was going on. And so they're whipping up this fairy tale of genocide and ethnic cleansing. And this is not to say that atrocities aren't going on, because people are suffering indeed, but who is behind it? What is the cause of this? You have TPLF, which started the war, and you have the United States, which has been backing TPLF for a very, very long time, looting the region of all its resources. And now you have the peoples of the Horn standing up against TPLF. And it's exciting times. And I think people, particularly progressives around the world, should take note of what's going on before they intervene in this region like they did in Syria, Libya, Yugoslavia, and you just go down the list.
And then we heard from Undersecretary of State Tibor Nagy in a U.S. State Department briefing on November 19, 2020, saying, quote, "As I mentioned, we expressed our thanks to Eritrea for not being provoked when they were attacked by missiles, because apparently one of the aims of the TPLF hardcore leadership was to try to internationalize the conflict," end quote. Explain this again. The TPLF, who ruled Ethiopia for 27 years and then were thrown out by popular revolt. They're not popular in Ethiopia.
Again, we don't know the exact level of popularity, but I do not believe that they are popular because they looted the country of Ethiopia $30 billion over 10 years. And, you know, and it's just a massive amount of money. And this is according to UN reports of illicit funds transfers. But the people of Tigray were starving, literally living on 1.5 million people were living on food aid, while the TPLF leaders were looting the country to the tune of billions. And you have the WHO leader, the World Health Organization, yes, Tedros Adhanom, who is one of these figures. I mean, he's a billionaire, looted his own people. And so, you know, it's just, they do not have true, genuine popular support from the peasantry, you know, in Tigray. But I will also tell you again, because of they created this system known as ethnic federalism,
right,
which created these ethnic animosities where if you don't support TPLF in a way, who are you going to have? Who's going to be a force that's going to support you in your ethnicity? So they created this this system where by tacit consent, TPLF is sort of allowed to rule and to make it look popular, but it's really through intimidation, threats, and really creating no other options for political progress within their part of their region. So they did have insurgencies while they were in rule within Tigray. And so I do not believe that, given another option that other than TPLF, the Tigrayan people would not choose TPLF.
Okay. And of course, this report also argues that because this is a secessionist, irredentist war, the only way to manufacture consent for it is through massive disinformation. And the only way to achieve this massive disinformation is through these narratives of media blackout, right? So that standards of evidence that the media will accept are lowered. So we're hearing now from the likes of New York Times, BBC, Al Jazeera, that humanitarian access to Tigray is restricted. Is that the case? And if so, who is doing it?
That's the narrative that the Western media is pushing forward without citing any evidence to corroborate such claims. What we know is that the government itself was providing 70% of humanitarian aid funding to the region. And you have WFP on record, the director of that, leader of that, who says that, you know, we're making our way into Tigray, and endorsing the fact that the government has been doing a lot to help with aid reaching the region. But we also have to consider the fact that multiple convoys of weapons in NGO trucks and caravans have been caught on record. And we just simply can't ignore that, because TPLF is encircled and they're going to need supply lines. And where are their supply lines going to come from? They're going to need weapons. They had 80% of the weapons at the Northern Command, which they attacked and sought to keep, that were in their possession for a day or two, but were ultimately captured by the federal government. And so without weapons, without medicine, without food, all these things to support their fighters, where is all this stuff going to come from? And the government has actually, despite all of this, given these things to the people, knowing that, of course, some of it may potentially end up in the hands of TPLF fighters, but it has not restricted these things to the people, according to my knowledge. What we do know is that who is actually restricting these things? We have on record TPLF saying it's going to destroy bridges. And in fact, just recently, the Tahaze Bridge was actually destroyed. And it's funny, the blame immediately went towards the government. But does that make any sense? It wouldn't, because the government itself is currently repairing that bridge. So why would it destroy something and then repair it? It just doesn't make any sense. You also have media that had showed TPLF destroying bridges. There was a VRT News, which is from Holland. You had a reporter who came out there to Tigray and saw that a bridge had been destroyed and actually blamed TPLF and said they weren't letting humanitarians as well as journalists get onto the other side. So when it comes to actual evidence, you find that TPLF is stopping aid from getting in, or at least the image of it. Why? Because then what's the narrative going to be? Oh, the government is stopping aid from getting in. It's, you know, creating ethnic genocide. It hates us so much. It hates our people. We have no choice. We need airdrops. We need a no-fly zone for aid to come in, which in other words is code word for humanitarian intervention, which is code word for war. So we have to be very careful about these narratives that they're pushing forward, just suggesting that aid is being blocked. We need evidence. Show us where it is being blocked. If you think that totally unrestricted, unfiltered aid is going to come in, which includes weapons, potentially very dangerous weapons, the West is out of its mind. There's no problem with aid getting in and access being quote unquote unfettered, the term that they like to use. But if you're talking about unfettered in the sense that military equipment and hardware is going to enter into Tigray, no, no, thank you.
Now let's figure out who the actors are. The role of the media, there seems to be a whole disinformation network. For instance, talk about the International Crisis Group and its pro-TPLF bias, according to this report.
So International Crisis Group is a well-known organization in the Horn of Africa. They have done horrible things, said horrible things, written horrible things about the different countries in the region. They've basically stoked chaos in Somalia. I remember personally from my experience about reading about what was going on when TPLF attacked and invaded the Somali people, the Somali nation. What happened was that the ICG said that there were 2,000 Eritrean troops inside of Somalia, and there was just no evidence. There was no proof. And they just ran away with that story and just thought it was okay. And that was back in 2007. And one of the reasons why Eritrea got sanctioned was for involvement in Somalia, and works like the ICG, publications by them, were cited. And so it has been sort of this organization that's used to target countries and create crises, ironically, instead of solving them, creating them and managing them. And so what they did, or what they're currently doing with the Tigray conflict, is they're doing the same. They created this narrative that TPLF was this battle-hardened group that had 250,000 soldiers, was basically ready for war, emboldening the group to the point where they attacked on November 4th, bragged about it, openly stated they attacked and said that they were going to be going for Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia. They fired missiles on Asmara, Eritrea, forcing Eritreans to have to respond. And then when they did respond, then you have them crying foul and saying it's genocide against the Tigrayan people. And ICG has been all this while just going along with this narrative, providing a decontextualized sort of analysis of what's going on. And one of their most unsavory characters is William Davison, who actually was based in Addis Ababa and was the lead for the foreign correspondence. He had an organization where he led foreign correspondence there, and eventually got kicked out of the country when the Tigray conflict ensued because of the fact that he was just pushing out so much disinformation and taking a very positive line on TPLF, supporting TPLF, just one of the most sycophantic characters when it comes to TPLF, making you wonder if he's on the payroll. And in fact, he was liaising with a TPLF office known as the Tigray Friendship Office, headed by Wandimu Asaminu, who is actually a former TPLF ambassador to Somalia. I don't even want to say Ethiopian ambassador, because he was truly TPLF ambassador, and would work very closely with General Gabre, which is one of the most hated characters in Somalia. You ask any Somali right now about General Gabre, and they'll tell you horrible things about this TPLF general. And so you had William Davison liaising with this office, and to this day, I believe, continues to do so. And so he basically gets the talking points for TPLF and then pushes it in the international media through ICG.
I see. So that's the International Crisis Group. Now, other actors in this disinformation network would be the ones that later go on to produce high-level reports based on what you claim in this report to be evidence-free assertions, amplifying primary sources, even priming witnesses, staging reports from, say, refugee camps. And Eritrea has been scapegoated, clearly scapegoated in many of these media narratives. Can you explain?
Yes, Eritrea absolutely has been a scapegoat in the region, mainly because of the fact, as I mentioned earlier, Eritrea has been a bastion of resistance in the Horn of Africa and Africa in general, mainly because it is not aligned with the United States. It refuses to do the bidding of the United States like TPLF did while it was ruling Ethiopia. And so it used TPLF to try and destroy Eritrea, to reverse Eritrean sovereignty and create regime change in Eritrea, depopulating the country of its youth using UNHCR, which is mainly staffed by, I should say, even at their headquarters, TPLF sympathizers. And that's why today they're actually denying atrocities against Eritrean refugees that are currently in Tigray. But, you know, the thing is that Eritrea has been this scapegoat, you know, for its policies, its independent, self-reliant policies. And everybody knows that, you know, it's the threat of a good example. If Eritrea's policies or ideas were to be spread to the rest of Africa and to the Horn of Africa first, you know, you're going to have to, as a hegemon and an exploiter like the United States tends to be, you're going to have to nip it in the bud. And they tried and it failed. And they had an isolation policy against Eritrea for so many years, but it failed. And Eritrea continued to fight for the peoples of the Horn of Africa, to be on the side of the people. And now we are seeing the resistance has grown wide in the Horn of Africa, and they have risen up, brought about new leaders, removed TPLF to the point where they were boxed into their own region in Tigray and on the run. They started the war, and the war is now contained, encircled. It's a form of encirclement that they're currently in with their supply lines cut off. And so basically, Eritrea is one way of, you know, getting access to TPLF, to going, you know, going by the Eritrean border. And then also the Amhara region is to the south. And then you have the Afar region as well. And so what they're trying to do is find a way to penetrate in there. And so they're vilifying the various entities like the Eritrean government and the Eritrean Defense Forces, as well as the Amhara militias. As well as the Ethiopian federal government. And so they're attacking all these different entities. So although Eritrea is scapegoated, you know, it's every entity that is challenging TPLF is being attacked. And so this includes even the Amhara people themselves are being attacked for defending themselves. And then you have the federal forces, which is comprised of all different ethnicities. Yeah, this is essentially what's going on. And people have to recognize that if you are a progressive, if you are a leftist, if you believe in people being governing their own lives and not being exploited by these international corporations that come and prey on these innocent peoples in the region, then you would be wise to support this new Horn of Africa led by this longtime leftist country, Eritrea, as well as this rising, young, exciting leadership, you know, leaders in both Somalia and Ethiopia. So exciting times.
Absolutely. Talk about the role of the African Union in the region. Even the United States and the UN have been supporting and promoting the idea that African problems should be solved by Africans.
See, they were all about African solutions to African problems when TPLF was governing Ethiopia and Ethiopia being the head of the AU at Addis Ababa. Of course, they were all about African solutions to African problems. But there's a little problem that they have now. Africa is returning back to its rightful owners. And in fact, TPLF being out of power has brought true more African governance to Ethiopia, which means, you know, given Ethiopia's long time and historic status in Africa, Africa's back in African hands. And so it's not as simple as that. There's many challenges, you know, we'll have to overcome. But the point is that they are now moving away from African solutions to African problems and trying to take African issues and move them beyond the AU. So a perfect example is you have the issue of the GERD Dam, the Grand Renaissance, the Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, which, you know, the Arab League was pushing for a non-AU process and pushing for the UN Security Council to bring up this issue, a resolution on the dam. Why? This is an African issue. I thought we were talking about African solutions to African problems. And this is exactly the opposite of that. And the reason why is because they know that if the issue is back in African hands now under the new, this new forming African leadership, this new African Renaissance, we can even call it, what will happen is that genuine problems will be solved and they're not going to be the Western desired choices. So this is the concern for them. And I should say that, you know, getting the Arab world to push this agenda in the UN Security Council, I believe, is actually because of the meddling of the United States, because you have the special representative to the Horn of Africa that was recently appointed by Biden. His name is Jeffrey Feltman, who's on record saying that he's going to go to the Arab countries to get them to turn against the Horn of Africa countries. And so he's just another truly unsavory character who is trying to externalize African issues and make them international Arab Gulf problems. But Africans are going to stay resolute and keep pushing for African solutions to African problems.
Let's talk about the geopolitical scenario. The Biden administration has appointed some very unsavory characters from an anti-imperialist standpoint, such as Susan Rice and Anthony Blinken. These folks are really pushing a unipolar world, with the US being the hegemon, as you mentioned earlier. What is the role of Russia and China in the Horn of Africa, in your opinion?
In regards to China, we all know what China has been doing in Africa. Their business is basically, they just go in and do business with Africa. And they do deals that are based on economic and economic development, economic progress. And whenever China gives money to Africa, it's called a debt trap. You know, China is vilified, but for the most part, China has been doing good in Africa, helping to develop Africa. Russia also has been, you know, trying to make inroads and is steadily doing that these days. And I think we can go back and do a little reading on American views towards Russia when it comes to, you know, when it comes to Russia geopolitically. And it's seen as the premier military threat in the world to the United States. And so there's this fear of Russia, again, making inroads in Africa. But they are making steady inroads in Africa. And so far, you know, we're not seeing the threatening nature that the United States takes towards Africa with Russia. And so really, China and Russia have had a mainly positive influence on the African continent. In the modern era, I would say, you know, post, you know, since 1990 and beyond, it's been very positive. And so this goes for the Horn of Africa. There are multiple deals being cut at this current moment to increase and strengthen the partnership between Russia and Africa, China and Africa. And I think these things are only going to accelerate as we move to a more multipolar world. So the United States is deciding to go full anti-New Horn project, this new Horn of Africa. So if they continue to do that, well, too bad for the American ruling class.
The report claims in its conclusions that the U.S. policy towards the Horn of Africa is a failed policy. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so the United States decided to go all in on supporting their client regime, TPLF, thinking that this was going to be a sustainable, lasting regime, a project for the Horn of Africa. And Ethiopia actually has, it's historically had a special status with the United States, which is called an anchor state. It's one of four in Africa. And basically what's happened is with TPLF falling and having no other contingents, there's no contingency plan, no mitigation strategy to speak of, they're essentially going all in on TPLF, despite TPLF being totally encircled without arms, being hated by the entire Horn of Africa, being hated, you know, north, south, east, and west. And so they have no strategy. They're trying to influence countries like Sudan and Egypt using the dam issue as a form of leverage over Ethiopia. But I hope our African brothers in Sudan and Egypt do not fall for this, because again, African solutions to African problems. It's not good to take sides on this issue. I just feel as though because the United States is so desperate and has nowhere to go to other than TPLF, it's confused. And it truly is a failed strategy. The last three decades have been one of failure, essentially, for the United States. And so right now, if they lose the Horn of Africa, I do believe they lose Africa. And if they lose Africa, what does that mean worldwide? What happens for the United States? So the United States can't lose the Horn, yet it has no strategy at this moment other than just support TPLF. So I'm telling you, all eyes need to be on this part of the world. And I guess the focus right now is trying to airdrop supplies to Tigray, or to have TPLF break through what they're calling, quote unquote, Western Tigray. And this is basically a part of Tigray that would border Sudan. What happened is that back in 1991, TPLF created a new constitution, drafted in 1994, actually, and the system was put into place in 1995, where they expanded the borders of their region to include ancestral lands of the Amhara people, which are located on the border with Sudan. And the reason why they did that was in order to have this border with Sudan. And what happened is that now losing this war and being encircled, the Amhara people have risen up and taken back their lands. There's a video footage of TPLF fighters making their way towards Western, this so-called Western Tigray, which includes the very important region of Walgait, which is right now the focus of the United States. And so all eyes should be on that part of the world as they try to break through to get into Sudan and therefore to be able to get supply lines from Sudan. So the strategy has failed on the part of the United States, but this is what they're focusing on, is absolutely going all in on TPLF, no matter the cost. So don't be surprised if they start pushing for R2P or they start potentially, God forbid, get boots on the ground.
R2P being responsibility to protect, doctrine of which Samantha Power is one prominent proponent, a dangerous proposal. Would you say that the U.S. is willing to cut off its nose to spite its face, so to speak, just to weaken its rivals, China and Russia, in search of a unipolar world order?
We know that they have done that back in the 80s under Reagan to bring down the Soviet Union, you know, doing things that intentionally would hurt the United States, but knowing it would hurt the Soviet Union more. And so similarly, what they're doing is that if we can't have Ethiopia, Eritrea, the Horn of Africa, what we're going to do is we're going to destabilize this entire region and we're going to make it a hellhole that you will not be able to govern in our place. And so that is kind of their strategy. I call it a scorched earth strategy. Either we have it or no one does.
How is consent manufactured for this kind of project? Because of course, if people really knew what was going on, they wouldn't stand for it. And yet we see these young, educated faces on mainstream media claiming that there is genocide being perpetrated in Tigray and asking for an intervention. We see these folks and here, you know, I'm talking to liberals or progressives being pretty much yet again bamboozled in a way, even by media that claim to be leftist or progressive. And I'm thinking Democracy Now! And other outlets with somewhat large platforms whom Democrats and progressives trust, telling us this narrative that you have just very clearly laid out is a false narrative. So what can we do? What should people be doing? What should people be reading? What should we be watching, following, retweeting, and amplifying?
They are absolutely going all in on supporting TPLF media-wise, and they will never say we are supporting TPLF. They will never even, on the surface, it won't appear as though they're supporting TPLF. If you're lucky, they'll even mention TPLF. And so what happens is that they present this as genocide, as well as ethnic cleansing by the Ethiopian government and the Eritrean government against the Tigrayan people. And the reality is that right now, at this current moment, TPLF is going, it's administering its own region because there was recently a ceasefire on the part of the Ethiopian government and Eritrean troops totally pulled out. And so now TPLF is forced to govern. And what they did is when they took up the positions in government, they're currently engaging in reprisal killing several hundreds, if not, I don't know what the numbers are. I don't want to give any specific number, but it's been only a week and less than a week. And we're just seeing these horrible, horrible, barbaric sort of killings and video footage and images coming out. And so what the media is doing is just hiding this. Before, they were saying that there was a genocide going on in Tigray, right? And then what happened is that this was while Eritrean troops were there, and this is while Ethiopian troops were there, again, because TPLF started the war and fired missiles on Eritrea. So it was all about Tigray genocide, and that was the hashtag, right? But then, now that they've come into their own region, they're back administering, where is the Tigray genocide claim? Where are the claims of famine? Almost overnight, famine claims are gone. So we have to wonder, what is the media doing? Democracy Now! And all the other liberal media organs that had been pushing this stuff are now silent. And it makes one just wonder. It's truly confounding. And so I think we need to start thinking about moving towards more progressive media and letting things work their way upwards. Because the work that's being done by media such as this is the type of work that actually pushes truth out there such that those will eventually have to acknowledge what's going on and have to acknowledge the truth.
Has there been media censorship towards points of view like yours, like that of New Africa Institute?
I think most of the censorship comes in the form of silence, where they'll ignore you until they can no longer ignore you. And I think, you know, when you go on a TV show, you'll have maybe three people that are pro TPLF supporters plus a TPLF, sympathizing host. And then it'll be one person, and it's just like having a field day against this, poor person who's just trying to defend this other narrative. So the odds are usually stacked against those who support the non-standard narrative. And I haven't seen outright censorship on my part, but I do believe silence is enough, if enough of a serious issue to warrant a reassessment of media. And I really believe that, you know, they're going to have no choice but to acknowledge the truth once these crimes of TPLF get out. I mean, when they're already out there. But when they reach a degree that they can no longer be ignored, then the story will be coming out. And then we're going to have to hold the media accountable for their failures.
Mention some of the hashtags that fight against, hashtags such as We Stand With Tigray or Stand With Tigray, responsibility to protect kind of narratives. What are some of the hashtags that people should be using to stand with sovereignty, with the struggle for independence and anti-imperialist hashtags?
The ones that I see most commonly used and I use myself are hands off Ethiopia, hands off Eritrea, Ethiopia prevails, Eritrea prevails. These are the more commonly used hashtags. I think if you just want to get the other narrative. And then I would also recommend just type in TPLF. The funny thing is that most of these, activists that are claiming to be for the Tigrayan people and supporting the Tigrayan people or against the genocide of the Tigrayan people will never mention TPLF. In fact, they'll say, you know what, it's TDF now. And TDF is supposed to represent what they call the Tigrayan Defense Forces. And this is really a tactic that was actually really pushed hard by people like William Davison of ICG, who wanted to sanitize TPLF, wanted to put lipstick on a pig. But TPLF, if you type in anywhere, in Twitter, Instagram, whatever, you type in TPLF, you're going to get the other narrative. Why? Because they don't like talking about TPLF. But we will make sure to keep TPLF in the conversation because TPLF is the force that's behind all of this stuff. They're the local managers, and behind them is the U.S. and Western ruling class.
Mention again, you started briefly, you mentioned Tedros Ghebreyesus, right, of WHO, as a supporter of TPLF.
Yes, he was the foreign minister of Ethiopia, high-ranking TPLF member. And basically, when things got really hot in Ethiopia, after it was clear that TPLF was going to be falling, this was around the time of the Oromo protests that were going on and the Amhara protests later, Tedros Adhanom started making other plans. And basically was pushing for this campaign to become the World Health Organization leader as a candidate. I mean, he embarrassed himself on the world stage when asked questions about the just being questioned as part of the process and to the point of looking very foolish. And people started to question, why is this guy, getting promoted? Well, this guy has billions of dollars and lots of connections, very powerful friends in the West. And under the idea of we need to have more global Southern leadership and African leadership, he marketed himself and then became the WHO director general. And so the director. And so he is truly one of the most dishonest, one of the cruelest figures within TPLF, honestly. And it's sad to see that he has failed upwards. What happened is he actually hid cholera numbers while he was in power in Ethiopia and used that as a way of just sanitizing all the problems that were going on from an economic development and health perspective in the country. And so now when you look at the problems that we have in terms of a global pandemic with coronavirus, we now understand why this is a serious issue because he himself was a failure at his job in Ethiopia. And if you look, most of his tweets at the current moment are about the Tigray conflict and in support of TPLF. At a time when his major focus should be the pandemic and stopping the pandemic, go to his Twitter feed and just see how much he posts about the conflict in Tigray. So to me, he is still a TPLF member at heart. And needs to be exposed for all the terrible things he has done in Ethiopia against the Ethiopian and Eritrean people and Somalian people. And now we are seeing his true colors. He's truly a terrible figure. And I hope investigative journalists will look into this character and start doing Freedom of Information Act requests and start to look at his history worldwide in the United States and elsewhere.
Going back to the disinformation network, the report lays out a very clear series of steps or stages in which this consent for supporting an intervention is generated. It goes through, let's say, briefing Western contacts with misinformation, developing a pro-TPLF narrative, creating facts on the ground, such as coaching civilians that will later go on CNN or Sky News, the kind of false testimony of youth masquerading as massacre survivors for the New York Times, for instance, lots of false testimony that we'll briefly go over here. Once that is on Western media, it breathlessly seems to repeat these created facts, later amplifying primary sources and finally producing high-level reports that later go out to human rights NGOs, to academic experts, to media that don't seem to have any journalistic standards. And then later, this demand for international action is now generated. Is that more or less a good description of how this whole mechanism works?
Yes, absolutely. They actually create narratives before the facts are there, and then they find the facts, and then the facts get promoted on social media by the same organs, and then it eventually becomes a high-level report, which then is cited by governments to attack Ethiopia and Eritrea. So I really feel that people need to understand this, the distinct stages and steps and how it gets done. At the very start of it, though, is TPLF itself. It briefs its Western contacts, and three that I should name are Mirjam van Rijzen, which uses these things called situation reports from the European External Policy Advisors, which is
Europe
this,
External
like,
Program with Africa, right?
Yeah, yes, something
EPA.
Like that. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
EEPA. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they have Martin Plaut, which, oh my goodness, one of the worst of all that I have ever seen on the region.
Martin Plaut is with the Eritrea Hub?
Yes, Eritrea mm-hmm. Hub. It's mm-hmm. a blog and basically puts all the information out there, and he tweets very actively. He's a former BBC Africa journalist, and I'd be shocked to call him. Just calling him a journalist is, the furthest thing from the truth, because he is not a journalist, in my opinion. But that's what his cover was. And then you also have Alex DeWall, who is this go-to expert on all things Africa, particularly focusing on East Africa and the Horn in particular. And Alex DeWall, who, is based at Tufts University and heads the so-called World Peace Foundation, puts out a lot of his information through there. And he is often cited in newspapers, just like Martin Plaut. But they have direct contacts to TPLF members, and they don't hide this fact. They talk about it, particularly Alex DeWall, who claims to get information directly from the TPLF about like ground movements and the war conditions and this and that. And so they create a narrative. They'll write something up, for instance. So with Alex DeWall, it was famine. He was the head person on the famine issue. With Martin Plaut, it was and Mirjam van Rijzen, I should say, with EEPA, you had this creation of the Aksum massacre of supposedly 750 people, which then has been like revised downwards slowly and progressively because they couldn't find the bodies and corroborate the claims. And I mean, how often do you hear about bodies just like in a crisis going less rather than more? Usually you find more bodies as you do more investigating, but it's the opposite in this case because they couldn't corroborate anything. And so you just see these three principal sources as like most of the information, but there are many others. But usually it starts with these folks. And then because the facts are not there yet, what they'll then do is they'll send some of these foreign correspondents who just so happen, they claim to be foreign correspondents and African Ethiopian correspondents, but they're not based in Ethiopia or Tigray specifically. They're often in Nairobi and elsewhere, and they don't know anything about Africa. Like in the case of Kara Ana, who's an AP foreign correspondent, she didn't even know where Mount Kilimanjaro was. And she was based in Kenya. Not knowing it was in Tanzania, it's just a truly embarrassing thing. And
it's very racist, isn't it? Isn't it very racist? It's like racist. talking about those Africans that are killing each other, right?
Absolutely.
Those savages.
Absolutely. It's some mountain in Africa. Who knows? It's mm-hmm. somewhere there. So yeah, this is the type of character who's reporting on Africa, supposed to be an expert, and claiming that there was this Aksum massacre without any evidence, without proof. But she was sent to get the information. And we know that she's very close to a TPLF activist journalist as well, who had been, you know, working on that part of the world, and whose name is Elias Masaret. And you just have these people going, getting the facts that they need from TPLF activists. And another good example is actually with Nima El-Bagr. Nima El-Bagr is a CNN reporter of Sudanese descent who just will just manufacture evidence. I mean, she's if you talk to any Ethiopian, Eritrean, you know, the average person, you name Nima El-Bagr, you're going to get this look on their face of horror, because what she writes is, actually she does a lot of video journalism. She'll go and she'll like use very manipulative footage, you know, angled at a certain way to create a certain effect. And you know, she'll follow up on what Plaut, DeWall, and Van Ryzen will do in creating the facts on the ground. So in one case, remember, you know, they'll give a number for a massacre. And in the case of the Mariam Dengelak massacre, they said it was, I can't recall, it was 275 or 250, somewhere in there. It's hard because you got to keep up with their numbers. They keep changing, right? But anyway, the most important thing to understand is that there is a video that she uses in this, you know, video journalist type of reporting on the issue, where there's this villager on camera who says that there are X number of people who died. And there's this TPLF activist who's filming this. And actually for the CNN cut, let me just say, with the CNN cut, it's like this person's on camera saying what happened and saying the number of people dead. But if you look at the full video footage, which she probably didn't know or just fails to acknowledge, this villager who's being asked how many people have died, and he says one number, a TPLF activist who's holding the camera says, no, tell him to say some other number. A guy walks up, tells him a different number. He changes his number, but he's like an old man, so he didn't hear correctly. So he keeps changing the number, and the guy's like, no, it's this other number, until he finally arrives at the number. And it's all in just like broad daylight for you to see that this guy is just cooking up a number that this TPLF activist is telling him. And then this is used to then, in the CNN report by Nima El-Bagr, along with a bunch of others in this like investigative report. And so it's just used to promote this idea that there was a massacre there. And when you read through that same article, they'll say that, oh yeah, all the bodies were eaten up by vultures. Oh, well, guess what? They did the same thing in the Aksum massacre. They said that all the bodies were eaten up, or a lot of them were eaten up by hyenas. And we tried to look for the, there's supposed to be mass graves, and all of a sudden they disappear. You know, they're like, oh, what happened to the mass graves? Because, you know, there's these claims of like where these bodies are, but when it comes time to actually go and find these bodies, you don't ever seem to find them. This is the problem with the disinformation. It starts with the narrative first. They already create a crisis. They say something happens, and then they go and try and manufacture this evidence on the ground. So it's like creating facts on the ground. And then it gets promoted because it's, you know, reported in CNN, or it's reported in the AP, and then that's on, you know, promoted on social media. And then all these people are like, oh my God, we need to do an investigation. So then what do? They send in Amnesty International. They don't send, I shouldn't say send them, because they don't send them anywhere. What they'll do is they'll claim to have phone calls with people in Tigray. Oh, I thought you said that the telecommunications were down. How did you get that? In fact, for one of their reports, they claim the telecommunications were down in February. It was like February 8th when it was restored. But they said that they got the reports in like January. So how could you get it? How could you make the phone calls if the phone lines were down? So it's just a joke. The way they manufacture the evidence, the way they, just so blatantly lie about things. And they report so many quote unquote facts that you feel as though who would make all this up? You know, and they get so into the details, talking about the color of the eyes of somebody or something, you know, and you're like, why are you telling me this? So it's mainly to stop people from feeling as though they can undo this narrative, that they can challenge the facts. But we can't become complacent. We have to do our research. We have to ask questions and investigate what's actually going on the ground.
And talking about that, what are some of the more trustworthy sources that you follow and that you would recommend that our listeners and viewers follow?
So a lot of this stuff is coming out on social media. And so there's like, I really believe that social media is where this war is being fought. So you can follow myself, at STESFA or at STESFA on Twitter. That's STESFA. You know, there's others. There are others. I like the work of Jeff Pierce. You know, Jeff Propulsion is his Twitter handle, at Jeff Propulsion. I would follow the Ethiopian fact check. I think it's at SOE fact check, which is they just changed the name now because it was for the state of emergency that had existed before, but now it's for the ongoing crisis, but it's a fact check by the official government. I think it's really important to follow those governments because we always get the official American government view through the media. But I also think we need to hear out what these governments are saying in their own defense, even though if we don't take them at face value. So I would follow the information minister of Eritrea, Yamane Jimaskan. And another one is Blen Siyum, which is, I don't know her handle, but she is the spokesperson for the prime minister's office, which I think is another great person to follow. I mean, there's so many others. I just don't want to make it personal. And, you know, I feel bad that I even gave my own handle, but I don't know else to.
No. We do want you to give out your handle and let folks know how to follow you and people you follow, right? Is there anything else that I may not have asked you about? I know there's a lot. This is a very dense report that we've been talking about from New Africa Institute, once again titled Disinformation in Tigray, Manufacturing Consent for a Secessionist War. Anything else, Simon?
Yes, I would like to say that what is going on right now in the Horn of Africa can have, you know, can have an enormous impact on the world right now, because I just want people to know that there is a genuine resistance bloc that is forming, and some are now calling the new Horn of Africa, this Horn of Africa where people are standing up and saying no to the tyranny of imperialism and, you know, super exploitation by the United States and Western governments. We just want to live in peace. And right now, you know, because everybody is seeing what the United States and what the West has been doing, intervening and meddling and supporting TPLF and continues to do so, you know, shoving this foreign force down our throats. And what the people are saying is no, we're saying no. And because we're saying no, and we're doing it so vocally, and they continue to push TPLF upon us, it's just radicalizing us and exposing who the United States is and how it operates. And I think that the world should get behind, especially progressive forces, should get behind the peoples of the Horn of Africa. We need the support before they ramp up a Libya-style humanitarian intervention war against the peoples of the Horn of Africa. And if you lose the Horn of Africa, that means the United States then again controls the Horn of Africa, or it's, you know, it'll be outside of the control of anyone. And you know, that'll be a major loss for the world, because I believe that, you know, again, this part of the world is the most conflicted and the poorest part of the world. So what happens when the poorest part of the world stands on its 2 feet? I truly believe, if you are the type of person that believes in going to the low, those who are the most exploited and lifting them up, you will lift up the world. I truly believe it. And so that's my message to all peoples.
Simon Despamariam, thank you very much for talking to us today on COVID, Race, and Democracy.
Absolutely. Thank you, Paulina. I really appreciate you giving me this time to tell them everything about this.